Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, September 15th, 2024, is by Barbara Threet on the topic of Oh, the Joy.
One of my favorite readings from our hymnal was written by the Bengali poet and philosopher and Nobel Prize winner Rabindranath Tagore. I've used it many times. I may well have used it here before, but you're going to hear it again today. Tagore writes, "Is it beyond thee to be glad with the gladness of this rhythm? To be tossed and lost and broken in this whirl of fearful joy? All things rush on. They stop not. They look not behind. No power can hold them back. They rush on. Keeping steps with that restless, rapid music, seasons come dancing and pass away. Colors and tunes and perfumes pour in endless cascades in the abounding joy that scatters and gives up and dies every moment. Is it beyond thee to be glad with the gladness of this rhythm?" Fearful joy, he says, abounding joy that gives up and dies every moment. Endless cascades of abounding joy, music and seasons and colors in a world that ultimately dies. And he says, be glad in it. What kind of joy is that? At last year's goods and service auction, one of the items raffled off was the right to give me a topic to ponder on for a sermon. Over the years, I've given dozens of sermons on topics that were won at a church auction. They've ranged from, what does the Virgin Mary mean to Unitarian Universalists? To, is, do I have to recognize inherent worth and dignity in everyone? From the theology of Monty Python, to forgiving the unforgivable. I particularly loved a topic that was actually purchased by the husband of a board member. He rarely came to church, but he came to the auction, and he asked that I preach on, why bother coming to church anyhow? He did begin to come more often, so I guess it was good. Julie Menard won our raffle last spring. She was kind. She made three suggestions and asked me to pick one, and the one that caught my attention was finding joy in everyday life. And this is that sermon. So poetry and my ruminations will wind around each other and we'll explore joy in life. Lebanese-American poet and philosopher Cahil Gibran writes the following words in his reflection on joy and sorrow. Your joy is your sorrow unmasked, and the selfsame well from which your laughter rises will oftentimes be filled with your tears. How else could it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed out with knives? When you are joyous, look deep into your heart and you will find that it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. And when you are sorrowful, look again in your heart and you will see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. Some of you say joy is greater than sorrow, and others say, no, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come. And when one sits alone with you at your table, remember that the other is asleep in your bed. I think of Tennyson's poem, In Memoriam, which was written at the death of a dear friend of his who died at the age of 23. Tennyson wrote, I hold it true. Whate'er befall, I feel it when I sorrow. I feel it when I sorrow most. 'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. The sorrow wouldn't be there without the love. And in the hymn that we'll sing at the end of this service, we'll find the words, joy and woe are woven fine. And I, at least, believe that is very true, and sometimes very hard. I don't believe that one can have deep or lasting joy if one is emphatically trying to avoid pain or grief or loss. Often those are the doors to finding joy. Which takes me to the definition of joy itself. It's not synonymous with happiness. Happy is a temporary thing. It's uplifting. It's wonderful, and it's in the moment. It may be frequent. There have been days or weeks, even months, when I felt happiness so often it feels like that's a given. I remember those months when my children were learning to walk and crawl and move about, and it was every day was this new thing. It was quite amazing. But happy is fleeting, even when happiness may be great. Happy is a letter or an email from a friend I haven't heard from in a while, or the return of my favorite ice cream flavor in the grocery store. It's my delight when the first lilac blooms in the spring, or my relief when the car repairs cost a lot less than I'd feared. Happy is important. It's even life-giving and certainly life-affirming. But it's fleeting. It's the giddiness of Christmas with a gorgeous tree in the living room and lights twinkling on lawns during an evening drive home, and lots of presents in the family gathered on Christmas morning and the smell of sage dressing and all of that. And even if none of it is marred with a power outage or tight finances or family discord or anything else, suddenly it's all done on December 26th. We often hear about a post-holiday slump. We're left with fond memories sometimes and maybe a gift we genuinely like or resolve to get together more often. But what we've experienced most likely is happiness, a series of happy events and moments. But they don't necessarily translate into a deep and lasting joy. Merriam-Webster defines joy as the emotion evoked by well-being or success or good fortune, a continued thing. Joy has a longer time span. Joy is a deep confidence in life, accepting that life includes hardships as well as moments of delight. Joy comes from a trust deep in our bones that the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel won't go out, even if we lose sight of it temporarily, and from a certainty that we will find it again. It means entering fully into that whirl of fearful joy, the reality that life will include deep loss as well as abiding love, and times of great chaos as well as creativity or comfort. A bedrock of joy in our lives helps us weather the tough times, and it is a bedrock built layer by layer over time. Joy is not an assumption or a pretense that life is or ever will be problem-free. It won't be. But it is a certainty that it won't be constantly and consistently horrible either. And ironically, creating and sustaining that bedrock of joy means actively acknowledging, accepting, and perhaps even embracing the hard places in life, rather than denying them or ignoring them. We Americans tend to be big on positive thinking, trying hard to focus on what will bring us more good. Maybe if we think positive thoughts, good things will happen. And there may be some truth to that, but there's a lot of life that we can't control that easily. We can find ourselves locked into what might be called the duck syndrome, trying mightily to peer as if we're gliding serenely and effortlessly along on the surface of life, while underneath we're paddling madly, kicking off seaweed and mud and guck. Too often we're not really peaceful, let alone joyful. We're simply exhausted from trying to keep up that illusion. I think of Adrian Rich's poem, Diving into the Wreck, which is much too long to include in its entirety this morning, but I recommend it to you. The metaphor that she uses is of exploring a shipwreck, long submerged, and covered with rust and barnacles and old forgotten things, and she's going down through layers of water to explore that old hulking thing. "I came to explore the wreck," she writes. "I came to see the damage that was done and the treasures that prevail. I stroke the beam of my lamp along the flank of something more permanent than fish or weed, the thing I came for, the wreck itself, and not the story of the wreck, not the myth." And as she points out, there is beauty there as well as that rotting hull. There is the changing color of the water, the threadbare beauty of the ribs of the ship, the animals that are moving through. There is beauty even though it's hard. The wreck is already there. Avoiding it or denying it won't make it disappear. But from it, she can learn, can appreciate, and eventually she will emerge with a different perspective or a new appreciation or a deeper understanding. I think of the many times in life, in mine and probably in yours, where great pain or loss opened the door to something that wouldn't have been seen otherwise. Something that perhaps wouldn't even have been possible without the loss. I've had the privilege a couple times as a minister to do a wedding between people who have lost spouses and been heartbroken, and then later found each other. What a gift. Something new emerges when squarely facing a difficulty. There's a fund to combat a certain disease that arises from someone who's actually had it. Or the loss of a job propels someone to explore a different career path than they might have ever looked at otherwise. And a new source of deep joy is slowly born. The hard places, the cracks in life, can nudge us toward creativity or compassion or courage. And a sense of resilience and confidence might follow. In the Japanese tradition, there are those cracks in pottery that's been broken. And the pottery's been repaired, not by trying to make the seams invisible, but by emphasizing the repairs with tracings of gold. A new beauty emerges, which acknowledges the breaking and uses it as a path to create something different, maybe stronger, and just as useful. The first step towards bringing more joy, I would suggest, is probably welcoming all of life, including the parts that don't feel joy-filled at all. And then pay attention to what does bring you joy. Not what brings moments of giggles and giddy happiness, although those are certainly worth cherishing and seeking out, but there are probably times or activities or places that bring you a deep sigh of recognition and relief. If every time you put your hands into garden soil, you find your shoulders relaxing and yourself exhaling deeply as you think, this is where I belong, then be sure you're there often. It's something that brings you joy. Perhaps it's making music or listening to music without distraction or kneading bread or spending time with a particular person or doing a certain kind of work. Maybe it's a particular place where you feel your body relax and your breathing slows. It's what's feeding your soul. One of the unexpected gifts of ministry when I live an hour away from my closest church is long drives back and forth. For me, going over the same path time after time after time for months and years, whether it's driving or walking or I suppose even biking, means that I enter into the rhythm of a place in a way that I couldn't otherwise. The crocuses, and then the daffodils, and then the lilacs, and then the peonies, how the leaves change, where they're more red and where they're less, and when the buds come out, brings me peace. It soothes my soul. It brings me joy. And I'm fortunate in that my job means that I'm exposed to that regularly. But probably each of us have such things, things that let us go, ah, this is it. It's important to do those things regularly. It's important to remember what it is that makes you go, this is where I belong. So do those things. They're not luxuries. They're not frivolous hobbies or strange obsessions. They're joys. They're including things in life intentionally and appreciatively that builds strength and resilience and builds that bedrock of joy. And they matter. And when you're doing it, whatever it is, give up perfectionism. If you love making bread, it's not essential that every single loaf look absolutely perfect. It's important that you knead the dough. It's not a contest, even with yourself. You don't have to become an expert or even good at something if it brings you joy. You might get better with practice, or you might not. We were asked once in seminary to draw a grid with four sections, and one was, what's something you do really well that you really enjoy? What's something you can't stand doing and you do terribly? But one of them was, what's something you really don't do well, but you really enjoy? Often that's the place where you need to go. It doesn't have to be perfect. You don't even have to be getting better at it. You just have to do what feeds you. Welcoming the hard places, as well as the light-filled ones, may help you find joy. Honor what lets your soul say, ah, and keep growing that part of your life. And toss out the need for perfection. And next, pay attention to little moments in life with gratitude. My colleague, the Reverend Kathleen McTeague, she wrote our opening words today. In her UU meditation manual, Shine and Shadow, writes, every life is gift and grace, fragile, astonishing, and unrepeatable. We forget this easily, swept up in the pulse and busyness of our days. We hustle along with our private preoccupation, brows furrowed in concentration, hurrying lest we waste even a single minute. But all of the important doings that fill our days pale with our singular being. If we could remember this once in a while, if we could stop and simply marvel at the stupendous luck that has allowed us to be alive, perhaps we would live more gently with one another, more kindly and compassionately, as one survivor to another. Perhaps, I would add, we could more easily tap into that well of quiet joy, discovering more deep delight in life, remembering more of whatever it is that gives us energy and confidence to keep going, even when things are hard. We could learn to pay more attention to simple things and to appreciate them. Gratitude is one of the most important ways to find joy in life. Gratitude for everything. It's all a gift. A final poem by Anne Sexton called Welcome Morning. There is joy in all. In the hair I brush each morning. In the chapel of eggs I cook each morning. In the outcry from my kettle, which heats my coffee every morning. In the spoon on the chair that cried, hello there, Anne, each morning, and in the beauty of the table that I set with my silver and plate and cup every morning, there is joy in all of that. All of this is God right here in my pea greenhouse each morning, and I mean, though I often forget, to give thanks, to faint down by the kitchen table in a prayer of rejoicing, as the holy birds at the kitchen window peck into their morning meal of seeds. So while I think of it, let me paint a thank you on my palm for this God, this joy, this laughter of the morning, lest it go unspoken. The joy that isn't shared, I've heard, dies young. Anne Sexton is right. Joy that isn't shared can wither. So share whatever joy you have, not with false gaiety or saccharine assurances that all will be well, because often it won't, often it isn't. But what you can share and what the world needs is your calm presence, your confidence that there's more to life than whatever the current trauma or crisis is, no matter how real the trauma or crisis is. A bedrock of joy reminds you that there's more than just the hard parts, that you can learn from the hard parts, and you can draw from that well of joy and even share from it. Perhaps something will unfold out of the trauma itself. You'll gain a new level of compassion or the impetus to create something new, and perhaps sharing your joy in trauma will help someone else to do the same. Perhaps the chaos around you or even within you is rather like a wild November windstorm that knocks off every single leaf and also reveals the shapes of the branches in a new way. Maybe your joy will lift someone else or open a new possibility or shine a light into a corner that's in need of some light. So to bring more joy, embrace all of life, including the hard parts. Notice the things that bring you ease and lift your spirits, and be sure they're regularly included in your life. Release perfectionism. It doesn't have to be done perfectly. It just needs to feed you. Pay attention with gratitude to all the little blessings in life and share the joy that you've found. One last poem by Mary Oliver, slightly adapted. If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give in to it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise, and often we're not very kind, and much can never be redeemed. But still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps the joy that you feel is a way of fighting back, of remembering that sometimes something happens that's better than all the riches or powers in the world. Whatever this joy is, don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of its power. Joy is not made to be a crumb. May the bedrock of your life be rich with fearful joy, and may it sustain you. Amen.